And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 191. Folks, I'm Sas Sennenstein. I'm your host for this, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Full disclosure right now. I need to give this to you right now. Because you might hear something in the background right now. You may hear what sounds like a babbling child. And it is. Normally, I record this podcast and I record the introduction in a little room in my garage, a little sound room that I've created. But today I am home by myself with two sick children. They're not in school. Well, they wouldn't be in school. It's break anyway, but they're not in school. And they are they're awake. I didn't do the introduction last night when I meant to, so I have to do it today. But they're here, and he won't. The youngest will just not be quiet. He just won't. I can't. I've tried to do this intro several times. Quiet, and it's not going to happen. So you're going to hear some babbling in the background, potentially, maybe some coughing. Hopefully, nothing gets worse than that. But. So you're going to hear that in the introduction. You're just going to have to deal with it. I'm using a different mic. I'm using a different recorder than I normally do. So this intro may sound a little different than the actual pod, the actual podcast. Okay, so forgive me. But hey, today is another Black and a Half Reviews episode with guests, though. With guests. I have my good friends, Chelsea Day and Eric Stewart. Power couples, as I call them, of the Northwest. Power couple of the North End, Shoreline. In their neighborhood in Shoreline, they are a power couple, okay? And they, I brought them on to discuss with me the new film, the new Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence film, Don't Look Up. It's a satirical take. I was going to say satirical comedy. It's pretty much always a comedy. I guess it doesn't have to be, but it's a satirical comedy about an asteroid coming to hit Earth and the indifference it's causing in the world. Okay. As these scientists are trying to alarm the world to this catastrophe. So we talk about this film. I was glad to have guests on. I felt validated. I'll tell you just real quick. I mentioned this a little in the episode, but I don't usually go on a limb on movies now amongst peer critics because I know I like some movies that some people don't like as much, or I don't like movies that are popular amongst critics. So I was so sure that this movie was going to be well regarded because I liked the movie, right? I liked the movie a lot, and I saw some good feedback from other people. So I'm like, oh, you're done? Okay, that's good. He's done. My son's done. I had to say that. Sorry, he wouldn't let me go further. Anyway, I got good feedback on, or not, I didn't get good feedback. I had heard good feedback about the film, other people liking it, and I adored the film. I liked it a lot. I'll say I liked it a lot. I liked it more after talking about it. But so I posted in my Seattle Film Critics group about people. I hope people watch this before they vote for our awards coming up. And it got lambasted. People did not like the film at all. And I'm like, oh my God, why did I speak up? I look like an idiot now. Then the next 2 days, I just see people talking on Facebook, just normal people, about how great this film is. People were really into it. And I felt validated. So I feel like the people's film reviewer, right? I am in the mindset of the common man. I am the populist film critic, I guess. That maybe I'm not. I don't know. Maybe I'm ridiculous and I like the same ridiculous things as a lot of my friends, and maybe that's just a coincidence. But yeah, so I wanted to have people on that also like the film because I don't want to argue with people. No, they just definitely, I wanted to get into some of the film and the things that I liked about it. So, of course, having people that agreed with me helps with that. But I will definitely get some dissenting opinions on other films later on. Because there's definitely, it's even more fun to have someone on if you both have polar opposite views of the same film. That's what's wonderful about film, I guess. So yeah, this episode ended up being a longer discussion than I planned. So, and in the episode, I do also mention you heard other film reviews. I got two film reviews coming up. I'm going to launch them as a separate episode. Swan Song on Apple TV Plus just dropped, and Lost Daughter, which opens up Friday. So I may drop this tomorrow. So opening tonight, The Lost Daughter on Netflix. Got those reviews coming for you. So they will not be on this episode, despite what you may hear mentioned in the recording. I didn't end up doing those two ones before this. So, but it works out. I think it works out. This is a good fun episode. If you haven't seen the film, we don't spoil on here on the episode. So you're pretty safe listening to it if you haven't seen the movie yet. And of course, if you have, I think you get a lot more of what we're, you get some of the inside baseball that we might mention. And let me know what you thought of the film, if you enjoyed it. Am I your reviewer? Am I the one that you agree with that because I gave you, you like the things that I suggest, so you just want to keep hearing what I'm suggesting? Let me know if I am that people's reviewer. Okay, Finn, I'm talking. Danny's trying to make money. Okay, thank you. But and also, I would like to thank you, the listener, you the Patreon supporter, especially those who, for $1 a month, a minimum, have decided to join the League of Extraordinary Listeners at patreon.com/black and a half. You jumped over there and you signed up for $1 a month, or maybe you decided to be an Inner Circle member like Keith Nagel, Stephen Ward, paid a little bit extra a month and get a shout out on the air for as long as I can do that. Maybe you're one of them, and I would appreciate that. As a New Year resolution, maybe you should be like, you know what, I'm going to support reviews or the arts. We'll say it's the arts, and we'll call myself the art. If you want to support the art, go ahead and go to our patreon.com/black and a half page and donate today. Also, you can go to Apple Podcasts and give us a nice 5-star review. That definitely helps a lot as well. And you can also listen to my sister podcast. It is a... What? What? Don't... Okay, Finn, let me finish here. I'm trying to give the ad. This is the important ad. Because this one is about my other podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Einstein, where I educate and empower homebuyers all over the nation about the process of buying a home. Because... Oh, okay. Good. Glad you're okay. I want people can check that out at either yourbuyingahome.com or go to wherever their podcast source is, and they'll find it there. And hit number 13 on Apple Podcasts this year, so it's very popular. And of course, if you're in the Seattle, Washington area, I would love to help you out in buying a home. So you can email me. Just email me at silas@blackandahalf.com, and we'll chat about it. We'll get you going if you want to buy or sell. I don't care, really. Buying, we spend more time together. We can talk about movies and nerdy stuff. That'd be fun. But anyway, that's that podcast, and this is this one. So right now, I want you to open your heart and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 191. Don't Look Up, with special guests Chelsea Day and Eric Stewart.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Joining me right now, we have Eric Stewart and Chelsea Day, power couple. You know, North End power couple, who also, I believe both, were fans of the film Don't Look Up, as I just said in the intro, right? Were you both on the positive side?
Definitely.
The film? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Very positive.
Okay, good. I mentioned earlier in the intro how I really liked this film and wanted to have people to talk about it. And so you were one of the, Chelsea, you were one of the first vocally, like, that you said a bunch of stuff on it rather than "Don't Look Up, go see it." You know, like that's what I was seeing a lot of.
Right. That's what I posted initially, but yeah. Then I went into a little bit just to give it a little bit of extra enthusiasm for the sake. It's an important film.
Yeah.
Given the state of the world right now.
You know what's funny? Somebody on my feed today said, got mad. Because you get mad about everything, right? That people said, just go watch it without giving a trigger warning about the state of affairs and how close it is to real life right now. And they should have been, you should have prepared people for intellectuals who will understand how related it is. And I was like, oh, piss off. We're all smart. We got it. It was just funny. Like, no trigger warning. No, I was like, I'm not giving a trigger warning for a film when there's trailers. You know, watch a trailer. Let's see. Okay, so to sum the film up, okay, real quick. Don't Look Up, 2021 film, directed by Adam McKay, screenplay by Adam McKay, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, Rob Morgan, Jonah Hill, and I don't know why it does not have Meryl Streep like way up top here. it's a runtime of 138 minutes. Fun fact, a budget of $75 million, probably $30 million to Leo. Then box office, it brought in $1.4 million so far. Which is funny. These Netflix films, well, they always,
it's
look
just
like
a labor of love, you know?
No, yeah, these Netflix films, because they only release for like a weekend. In like they only usually do a New York and LA run like for one weekend so that they're eligible for awards. That's how you're eligible. You have to be eligible for the Academy Awards. You have to, and Golden Globes, you have to run in one of those markets or both those markets for one weekend in a certain time period. So that's what they do. And then they bring it right to the streaming service. So that's why all these streaming original films look like they just bomb in the box office, but you know,
that's interesting.
They make money just by virtue of the subscription.
Yeah.
Like that's the intention.
Like if you just did the subscription numbers on like Disney Plus, how much money they make just on subscriptions is ridiculous. Like how they can just, they can fund a Boba Fett series. Sure. They got like $1 billion coming in just from the streaming service. It's crazy. And then some, it's an American satirical science fiction film. So Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence are two astronomers attempting to warn humanity via media tour about an approaching comet that will destroy human civilization. It's a satire on the government and media indifference to climate change. And Ariana Grande and Mascuti also collaborated on the song Just Look Up as part of the film's soundtrack. The film is dedicated to Hal Wilner, who died in 2020. I don't know who that is, but it was dedicated to him. I'm sure if I went through this like a professional, I would know. And it's nominated for, it's so funny. It's got like a really low critics rating on like Rotten Tomatoes, but it's nominated for the Critics' Choice Award for Best Picture. And it's got like a bunch of Golden Globe nominations, like four Golden Globe. So
on my original post, like everybody commented it that they loved it. Like just people from every area of society. And I was kind of like, not put off by that, but it just like, oh, it like it's that approachable of a movie that's able to bridge gaps. And I think that maybe
I'm shocked it's bridging gaps, honestly. Like when you said that, I was like, what, really?
Do some not people necessarily not with like evangelical conservatives, but just people that I don't think generally think about the state of affairs.
Okay.
I think it's actually approachable to them.
So it's a satire film. I had to look up when it was shot because I was like, is this about COVID?
I totally, it was more about COVID to me.
Right. Which is funny because it's not like it was production halted.
It wasn't about that at all.
No, COVID, they didn't even know about COVID when it was written. Like they were starting to shoot it, and then COVID hit, and they had to shut down productions, and had to wait until Hollywood got its clearance on when they can start shooting and how to start up again. So it got interrupted. So it was a little more just like a shot, I think, at the, I don't know, directly the Trump presidency or the just the mentality of the. I mean, I didn't look back to see if the people were in red hats at the rallies. I forget that, but like the secretary of, I forget if she was like of science defense or something that was like not competent. Like she was a doctor of literature or something. Like I don't know, something ridiculous. So I wasn't sure. Like I was like, so there's definitely shots at the administration, and then I was like, I wonder how much did they add stuff because of COVID? Because I totally saw it as COVID. The meteor's COVID. It's going to hit you. But it
I figured it was kind of after the fact and really relating to both of those things because it was so interchangeable.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was supposed to just be climate change in general. And I was blown away.
Well, I think that climate change is so out of the our everyday. You know what I mean? We're able to just, an island melted into the ocean and we didn't see that, right? But like COVID, whether we like it or not, we are seeing on a daily basis, and we're at the same time watching people completely ignore all of the facts and all of the science and all of the statistics. So I think that it's just more relevant in that regard right now. So it really works for that.
Do you think we could put this, could we have shot this film 10 years ago and put it there and people would still, would we relate? Was there something 10 years ago that we would just go, oh yeah, it's clearly about.
I don't know. I think, I mean, not as on the nose per se, but it's there's so many themes in the last 4 or 5 years that it directly relates to, but potentially, I mean, I think it could kind of look back 10, 20 years too, just with, the culture and politics among it all.
Right. So I thought it was very funny. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was poignant. Thought it was sad at times. It's really hard because I'm in this, I'm in a Seattle Film Critics Society and we have our own private Facebook group. And I made a comment about this and they all hated it. Like almost everybody.
That would make me so
I've only had
sad.
One really? I know. I was like, what? I thought everyone's going to love this.
It's just a fun movie.
Like what? And then
I was like, Leo?
I'm validated like by Streep? My feed of people, just like everyone saying how they love it. And I was like, I am of the people. I am the popular. Yeah. Meryl Streep. Yeah. I put her as one of my favorite things about the film was her role was just so. Oh, it was so she was so good in it.
She's fantastic.
Like I'm writing her in as she's actually I put her in as a nomination for this year for best supporting actress is one of my bit. I don't think we'll get it because everyone else in the society is all anti this film. But
I'm wondering why do you think that's the case?
I'm actually baffled because I wouldn't have said anything if I thought other people wouldn't think it was. I will say, there's some strange. I'm not strange, but unusual like editing in it. That's like it is a little jarring at times. Like. They just like cut out. There's like a few jump cuts that are just kind of weird. Like things are going on, and then he's at a refrigerator, and then he turns around. At least turned around. Like weird things that you don't see in movies so much that you may see more in like TV. Or it had a What's weird is like, so indie films certainly have a style, right? And mm-hmm. it almost looked like, it's almost like they were trying to style it like an indie movie, but it was not an indie movie. It was $75 million. It was a huge, big budget, all-star cast. But they're trying to make it look like an indie movie. And I wonder if that turned people off to it.
Hmm.
I don't know if it seemed too over the head.
I see what you're saying about that. Like, just that it just popped up on Netflix. It did have like an indie vibe, like the thumbnail thing in Netflix kind of was like, oh, what is this? You know, Timothée Chalamet wandering around a supermarket. It's like, what's going on here? And it did have a little bit of a, yeah, like, oh, some low budget film. And next thing you know, it's just like heavy hitter after heavy hitter after heavy hitter.
Right.
Maybe too. It's, I'm just thinking as we're talking, but like potentially a not like a necessarily direct dig, but a little bit of a dig at journalism. And maybe critics and can be kind of looped into that. So maybe it's not being able to take a joke or
maybe
I don't know.
I'm fascinated. I kind of want to do therapy sessions with everybody that's listening to it. Because they're a bunch of, I mean, I don't know their, I don't necessarily know their politics or whatever. Anybody can be a movie fan, right? And so I was like, is this too hardcore left for people? I mean, we're in Seattle for crying out loud. And I don't know. And what some of these people who hated it, the other films that they like, I'm like, well, you can't be too, you can't be too conservative if you like that film.
Yeah.
Zola is your number one film. I don't think you're conservative at all. I'm baffled. So I felt like, it's like,
I just don't think they don't have senses of humor. Like, maybe. What is happening?
I don't know. I'm just so lost. Some films I think like, I'm just, like, look, Star Wars Last Jedi, someone was comparing it to that. Maybe it's a reverse that because fans hated it, allegedly, but critics loved it. And so maybe this is reverse of that. But I don't know, it made me think about, is this why I never used to listen to critics? Because they never liked the stuff that I liked?
I only listen to critics that I like the stuff that...
Right, and like, I guess that's, and so it became a discussion point in there because I was like, hey, everyone else is agreeing with me, guy. And they're like, you know, like what you like what you don't like. It's the great thing about film criticism is that everyone has different tastes and you need that. And I guess that's ultimately why you follow certain film critics and advice. Like, I have friends who, when they tell me they love something, I'll check it out because I like their taste. Like, whenever I was like, oh, I kind of like 90% of what they like, I enjoy. So I, you know, you have personal friends who are film critics, sort, you know, to a degree, that you just like the taste. And so that's what I guess I'm trying to build as a following of people who have similar taste in different movies as I do. And hopefully, you know, I think I like more than most people because, like, I was really excited about the Macbeth coming out. It's out now. No, it's streaming in January with Denzel Washington. I was so excited about that, but I'm also excited about WrestleMania. You know, like I have
two
like very different things, but I'm like, I have fun with I accept things as they are, I think.
And you like Survivor.
I like Survivor. I got it ruined for it.
Oh, you don't tell it. Don't tell anybody.
We don't ruin here. No, just don't spoil. I'm like, don't spoil.
I would never spoil Survivor. That's like a evil to me.
Yeah, I like it. I like game shows. I just like entertainment. And then maybe I'm trying to figure out what it is I like about films. And I was like, well, what is it that I like that these people didn't?
I'm kind of with you though. I feel like I generally lean towards liking more things, but I look at it in the lens from, what do I think the director, the producer, the creators, the actors, actresses are trying to put on screen? Like, what's their message? Is it a drama? Is it a comedy? Is it reality TV? Like, what are they trying to accomplish? And so if you look at it in that lens, I think you can kind of get more behind what their intentions are.
Yeah.
So it's easier to want to like their product, you know?
Well, because it's all story in the end, whether it's a reality TV show or Macbeth. It's all story. And that's what I love. I love stories. I love making stories. I love telling stories. It's all the story in just different kinds. Like, even shows I used to not like, I would appreciate. Like I actually did ended up liking it. Like, Everybody Loves Raymond, the TV show, right? When I first saw it on, I was like, man, I don't relate to this. But after I had kids, I was like, oh, I totally relate to it. I get this. This is so funny.
Oh, it'd be fun to watch again. I liked it back in the day. It's good.
But like, there were some things I was like, look, I don't think if you have an open mind, you can't tell me this isn't funny. Like, it's technically funny. Like, it's by the book, mechanically funny. You should laugh because they did the
which
joke.
Which is this movie, too.
Yeah.
It just, it is. Like, we found ourselves laughing the whole time.
Yeah. There's absurdities that we know are going to cause laughter. And I did a lot of out loud guffaws.
We couldn't help it.
Like, oh my God. And which is amazing to you since you guys don't watch TV anymore, but you did.
No, our kids don't.
Oh, your kids
don't. We definitely
do. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wait, but your parents, like, I don't know. My wife is asleep like 20 minutes after the kids, so she really can't watch.
That's been what's happening with us, too. We
Chelsea's
have one,
good
we
for
have
one,
one,
hour,
one hour episode in us.
Okay, so what were your top three things, each of you, about the film? Did you have top three specific things that you loved about the film or liked about the film? Right, Eric?
Yeah, I have some
you
things.
Look ready. Okay.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready. So I honestly was watching it. I think maybe some of the parts that turned off some people, but I just loved how on the nose, like the messaging was so clear. It was just confident, knew exactly what it wanted to tell. And it was just upfront for everybody. I think that was the first thing I really liked. Another thing I really liked was that it kind of is a, you know, goes off of that as well, the first point, but it really mirrors in a lot of ways what we're dealing with in our culture and politics. And it's not like directly the same thing, but it's just like how us in the US would react to like crisis events or information, how it's received, how it goes. Kind of the whole media storm of it all. Mm-hmm. Amazing. I also loved the third point. I just loved the cast. I felt like it was well casted. I mean, it's hard not to show up for something that Leonardo DiCaprio's in, Jennifer Lawrence, Meryl Streep, of course. And I felt Mark Rylance, gosh, everyone came in and they brought their A game. You can tell they had fun. So I really enjoyed just watching the cast have fun and just really, really show up for it. So.
Okay. Chelsea, do you have any?
Yeah, I just thinking of when Cate Blanchett's like, okay, enough with the angry yelling woman. Like, just like such a perfect comedic timing moment. Okay. I think given the state of the world right now, there's those of us that are watching the news and watching science and paying attention to facts, and you've got a whole population, 40 to 50% of people that are just like, nope, not doing it. And we're all burnt out and we're all frustrated. And I wrote down that this was the most epic dunk on the Let's Go Brandon, Stop the Steal crowd I could have ever imagined. Like, it's just like, oh yeah, you like, tell Meryl Streep she's not a good actress.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And see what she does with a movie mocking you for, you know, 2 hours. I just think we're all frustrated. And I think it was just a way to like get everybody together and create an incredible movie that encapsulated all of our frustration, and it was funny, and it really worked for me in that regard. I highlighted the human condition in a way that was deeply infuriating, but also hopeful and connected. And I like anything that can arc my emotions in that way. And, you know, Jennifer Lawrence and just her, I wrote down that, like I could have definitely been like an angry woman meme at many points in my life. Like,
yeah.
And it was just such a perfect timely moment that she just got turned into an angry woman meme.
That reminded me of Greta
totally,
right?
Yeah. She
like she's out here saying like, what was it, she was like, stop it, or like you need to listen, and then people are like, let's make fun of her for,
right?
Yeah.
And so she just gives
you're
that,
upset
and it's
about
just
climate
like...
change, oh you're all gonna die, oh. Like what, really?
Yeah.
Are you gonna make fun of this child?
Right. Yeah, she was that was
she's mad that you're messing up her future.
Right.
So it's okay to be mad.
So yeah, I really appreciated the Jennifer Lawrence character. And
I think I
really
like her more now that we've been talking about it. I think I like Jennifer Lawrence more now than I did when I first saw it.
I've always really, really loved her and related to her. So she was kind of the perfect person for that role for me. And I just keep thinking of, do you remember then the congressman brought in the snowball to Congress to prove that global warming wasn't happening? Right?
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. I was Jennifer Lawrence in that moment of like, are you kidding me? Like, this is what we've come to, that a snowball is meant to prove that global warming is like, that's how dumb we are.
Uh-huh.
So I really related to her. And then I said, fun, fast paced, incredible writing. The movie had the task of capturing the whole world at once as they faced a global potential catastrophe. And I think they succeeded at doing that. So the way that they panned from different cultures and different people and babies and just really looking at everybody's different life in that moment and how they relate to the idea of potentially perishing in 6 months. I thought that it was well-rounded enough and kind of made you look from different perspectives. And I thought it did a good job at that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I hate saying the acting is one of my top things because I like to point out specific people, but there were so many. Like Kate Blanchett, I honestly didn't know that was her. I didn't either. I don't look at the cast list usually to see who's in smaller role.
It didn't look like her.
No, I didn't recognize her. Like, I was like, wait, I thought she had short hair the last time I saw her. Now
she looked super
hot. I know wigs exist and everything, but you know, she changes her, like her whole body changes when she does a role. So it's so like, what? I mean, maybe I should nominate you too. Should I just nominate the whole cast? Like,
she was a sleeper. I didn't recognize her either until like halfway through the movie. And she's got a pretty prominent part.
Yeah. I mean, it's decently big. I mean, her character doesn't have as much of an arc, I think, is the only reason I won't like probably nominate her. Like at least the supporting part should have some sort of arc so we can see some.
I didn't love that aspect of the movie, by the way. I didn't love their dynamic necessarily.
Yeah.
That storyline.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I like reconcile with it, I think that it just kind of shows the problems we create for ourselves as humans.
And how we can get caught up in ourselves. And, you know, there is I've talked to couples that like, you know, that were together when like 9/11 happened. Right. And that they were like, the world's changing. Do we even want to be together? We had to talk about this. Right. Yeah. Like, is this, things are going to, which now, honestly, the 9/11 problems that were created after that just seems so minor and minuscule now compared to what we're going through now. It's like, we had to take our shoes off. Oh my God. Life changing. Oh, I think my town is important enough that they might bomb my post office. Okay. They're not. But like, it's just so, everything seems so petty now that we're like, our whole life has changed. I can't go to the airport gate anymore. Jesus, I can't even go into a hospital. I can't be the second parent into the hospital now, right?
Yeah,
only let
wild.
One parent in. They say no, the rest of you gotta go. One person.
Yeah, that's a drastic change.
But I will say, like, I do think the acting throughout this was great. As you guys said, the storyline, I think it was on point. And I mean, so on the satire was so on that it covered multiple things that are going on in our world that weren't even intended to. And I just think that shows some solid writing.
Like the picture of Meryl Streep with the, what was his name?
Stephen Seagal. Yeah, a couple of them there.
Just all the pictures of her with like all over her office and her books in the bag. And I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, no, that's right. My top thing. Is there anything that about the film that didn't work for you? Things that you were like, nah, I don't like that. I didn't like how they tried to dirty DiCaprio's character in it. Now I understand you not wanting to trying to make someone not be a pure, they're just 100% angelic and stuff, but it seemed a little unnecessary for the story. Like, I think they tried to make him not perfect to make the ending in his storyline feel more impactful. But I think we would have got that anyway.
Right.
I know.
Interesting.
You know,
I thought about that.
They couldn't both be heroes or something, or in the same way. Or he had to have some of his own little arc or whatever.
Well, that like if he was just perfect, you know, like I just, you know, I'm not without giving away the ending of, you know, or the end of his storyline here. I think they thought that it would be more impactful if he had to like have a come back together kind of with his family rather than, you know, just everything being hunky-dory the whole time.
Yeah, I kind of like that a little bit, just to kind of, because at first when I was watching it, his arc in that sense, I just thought that I'm like, yeah, this seems a little unnecessary. But I feel like at that point you just said, it kind of brings things back together. It kind of does bring a few arcs back together, including with, you know, the media anchor, right? And Blanchett, and just a couple of them intersect the storylines. And it does, I think, have a more impact because it's more humanistic, potentially. I don't know.
I mean, lesson here, Kate Blanchett should be on your hall pass for one, right? I mean, I guess. anything, Chelsea, did everything work for you on it?
It really did. I have no faults with this movie. I mean, there's like, I'm willing to put aside any issue I have with Leo character, which I do think, in one of his big, acting moments, I thought like all of any irritation I had with his character, like went away with his moment. And I thought Jonah Hill, like everything with him was like pretty spot on perfect as far as making fun of who he was making fun of.
Yeah.
I did wonder how much of it was ad-libbed, and I felt like there's a couple unnecessary moments. So like there just may have been a few scenes I would have left on the editing floor, but otherwise, like I'm not even fazed at all.
We've talked around this a little bit, but just as a direct question, if you were to say the lesson of the film, what would it be to you?
Eric, you want to go first?
Sure. I think, gosh, I was trying to think about that one, like in general, but I think in a one word sense, it's like just a couple words, I guess. Listen, be open-minded. I mean, a lot of things, we try and complicate things, and this is kind of talking into the messages, is like we try and complicate things when a lot of times it's just like there, like look up at it, right? Look at it, it's right in front of you. And I think ultimately, and there's just, you know, and it's also like a message in a lot of ways to laugh at how silly everything can be and is, and also in those certain ways you can't appreciate the little things and the accomplishments too. I don't know, it's I know it's kind of a weird lesson and I don't really have a clear thought on it, but I have a lot of thoughts, I guess.
Yeah,
is the best way of it.
Yeah, it definitely left me thinking and ruminating on it the day after I watched it, which I think that's always a sign of a good movie, when there's those lines that linger with you and you're like, oh, wait, yeah. What happened? I just, we didn't talk about it that much, but like just the cell phone guy, just that he was the, like, he was cell phone.
Yeah.
Who he was as a person with cell phone, and just who needs human beings when you can have a meme sent directly to your brainstem to ensure that you'll never be sad again. And I thought I loved that whole, like, that's it's a whole movie all on its own, you know? But I think the lesson that I took from it is, if you potentially have 6 months to live, how do you want to spend your time? What really matters to you? And who do you want to be with?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want next to you on your potential deathbed?
Yeah. That's deeper than I was. I mean, what I love about movies is I do think a lot of, there's a reviewer called that their site is every movie has a lesson. And so his reviews are basically all the lessons learned from a film.
Oh, that's cool.
And I really like it. And so that's where it inspired this section of it, of my reviews. And I say it's follow science, not politicians. That's the lesson I take.
That's a good lesson. Perfect. I love that. That's why it's such a good movie, because all the lessons that, you know, they're all super valid.
Yeah.
Like this movie has so many lessons.
We all have many meteors, right, in our life. Mm-hmm. There's always a meteor heading toward us in some way. It's, you know, in some ways, I mean, I've talked about it on the pod before. You know, I have a wife with lupus, and in some ways that's my meteor. That's always that lingering thing. And occasionally there's a reminder, like there's a near miss, right? To go, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because when you have somebody with a disease like this, potential that we both live, the odds are we're both going to live to a ripe old age. Fine. Mm-hmm. But there's that possibility that at any point I could only have 6 months left with her. That's just always out there. That's always can be there. But we always have that, you know, like down our school, or just two months ago, there's a bunch of police blocking off a street near me when I was taking my daughter to soccer practice, right?
Mm.
A woman was killed taking her daughter to soccer practice.
Yeah.
Right? Like the same, and like an hour before I was doing it, the exact same thing right near it, right? So a meteor hit her that day out of nowhere. There's no warning, right? So there's always me. I guess I'd say that's another lesson for this film. There's always a meteor. So maybe live life like they're like, you know, it's coming.
like there's meteors everywhere.
Like there's always there.
But also like have fun while you're at it and make out with Timothée Chalamet if the opportunity presents itself. And
right.
Gosh.
You know, I don't know where that line is, but you know, there's that line where you, and I guess maybe they kind of showed it a little bit, how if you only have 6 months, you can either live completely carefree with reckless abandon, right? Because there's no consequences to life. Or you're like, I'm going to spend the time with my family and the people who are make me happy every day. I can do that. It's one or the other. You have to do one of those. There's no like in between. It's binary choice. But there is. Yeah, I think we show these two sides of life so that we can, you know, we hopefully find something in the middle, because you can't. Because, you know, you can't spend all your credit cards, because what happens if it, what if the meteor doesn't hit? Then you're like, okay, I guess we got to.
That's, gotta, you know, that happened, that happened with a lot of couples during the AIDS pandemic.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, that they just were like, all right, that's it for us. And then So they like married it's each common. Other and yeah. and were like, we're in it till the end. And then it wasn't the end.
Like, hey, we like, got a cure. Hey, we got something, a treatment for this.
About oh, this really? Whole in it to the end thing. And there was like lots of awkward breakups because of it.
Oh, man.
Well, how many breakups?
This is like a.
Like, how many breakups happened once gay marriage was legalized? Oh, right. I would marry you if only yeah. it was legal. It's legal now. Ah, well. Ah, okay.
So we have a little dog, and it gave him a year to live, like a couple weeks ago, like oh. on average a year to live. And I've had him for like 11 years. Oh. And it's actually like a perfect amount of time too. Like I'll assume he's going to live longer.
Right.
But like, if I only have a year to live with him, like we're a little bit sweeter with him. He gets a little extra special treatment. He sits on our, like, it's funny, just a little notch more that I'm doing for him now.
Yeah.
Knowing that he's on potentially borrowed time.
Right. Mm. We don't know. We all know. And yeah, see, that's what I love about this. This kind of film reminds you of when a meteor's coming like this, you know you're on borrowed time, right? Otherwise, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We know mm-hmm. a lot of people that are on borrowed time that don't know it, right?
Right.
It's going to, things yeah. are going to end shorter. And I think COVID has helped us probably think about that too. You know, I know certainly definitely. For me, how many times I punted down the field of oh, let's later we'll get to them like I mean when I've had my kids, these back-to-back kids, and we've got close time frames, right?
Yeah,
have been, I just need to get to them in school, and both of them in school, and then I'll get back to life, you know. I'll hunt down the field, I can hang out with people after once that's it, and then it's like, oh well, right. maybe shoot, did I miss all that? Did I miss that opportunity? <'Cause> now, oh no, now you're gonna be masked forever, so that's life, kids.
Yeah,
sorry. You'll never play Risk with them.
Oh man, yeah,
you'll never play
them. Yeah, no kidding. What, that's the damn, COVID was such a meteor, man.
Yeah,
like, just let's
boom.
But here's what's yeah. the real mystery is, why did the general charge for snacks?
It happens early in the film, and I do think it's so. That's what
I realize. What's not, I think it's not a big, but
not a big spoil. This is a great thing where this guy. It's an ongoing question. The general charges some people for snacks, even though they were free, and they just can't figure out why he was doing it. The whole wow, that never got. Yeah, okay. Well,
and some questions never. Yeah, answered,
I've thought about that.
It's good. It's good.
It covers so many bases. Yeah. It's just fun on so many levels.
Okay, so on the show, I give every movie gets I have the 3L system, right? You love it, like it, or lose it. Love it is the film that you tell people they got to watch right away. As soon as you're out of the theater or it's streaming, done streaming, you tell people right away. Like it is the, a lot, you like a lot of things. You put the remote down to watch the film, right? Even movies you don't like, you can like films that aren't good, right? Even if it's not good, you can like it. Lose it, I say, that's a film that I lost 2 hours so you don't have to. And now, you know what? I was a firm like it, a strong like it, right after the film, after going through this more, I think I've upgraded. I think I did love. I think I love the film. I think it's. I'm gonna champion this.
Oh yeah,
it's gonna be a lost cause, but I'm gonna start writing some names.
They're gonna throw tomatoes at you.
Oh my god! Yeah, thank God we're on Zoom. They can't reach me, but I'll be like, no, this is a solid film, dude. And actually, I will say another reviewer said that he was gonna write a scathing review of it. But as he was writing it,
what?
He started changing his mind.
Good.
About
God.
It. That he was actually a lot better than he thought once he started writing about it.
You know, someone said it was like a New Day Idiocracy, and that pissed me off a little bit.
It's way smarter.
It's way better.
Way better.
It's one of the worst movies. I hated that movie. It makes me mad when people are like, oh, it's like Idiocracy right now. That's like, just
except like we joke that in the joke is that Idiocracy was a documentary, right? But that's a clear joke. This line is so, this one is so much closer to actual reality and is actually worse.
You know, Neil.
Yeah.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah.
He said it's a documentary.
What? Idiocracy?
No. And, don't look up.
Don't look up. Yeah.
Yeah. He just like did a short review and he's like, this is a great movie and it's a documentary.
Yeah.
Ugh. That was it.
Poor guy. So I give it a love it. Do you, Chelsea?
We love it.
Love it. Eric?
Love it. Love it? We both looked at each other after watching it. We're just like, gosh, that, and it just lingers with you. It just sits with you. And then when movies have legs like that and they carry with you and you think about them.
When you can cry so hard, like when you can cry potentially, laugh so hard and feel so angry and feel very tense all in one movie, that's like, not a lot of movies can really do that so effectively, especially with the humor aspect of things.
Totally agree. Well, awesome. Chelsea, Eric, thanks for coming on the show. We've been like taught forever on it.
That's true.
Yeah. Longer than I expected, but there's that, again, sign of a good film. Sometimes I plan these, like I didn't plan it for this one, but like West Side Story, I was like, I'm just going to have an episode about West Side Story. Cause I want to talk about this and delve into it and did that. And I should have known right away. Oh, this is going to be a whole episode right here. but hey, thanks for coming on the show. Love to have you back another time when we find another movie.
We'd love to. We love movies.
Maybe a movie we don't.
Oh yeah.
Maybe find one that we don't agree on, and then.
Ooh.
Yeah. See what's that.
I like that.
Try to convince each other. all right. Black and a half.
Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive.
Live long and prosper.